season of The Big Web Show. Episode number 133, Everything Web That Matters. And speaking of web that matters, here's our good friend, Sazzy, a.k.a. Sarah Parmenter, designer, entrepreneur, founder of a bunch of stuff.
Hi,
how are you today?
I'm really good. Yeah, I'm really good. Thank you.
Are you becoming a global Twitter marketing specialist?
No. I don't think anyone is. It's not been around long enough, really, for people to call themselves or declare themselves masters of that, I don't think, yet.
I know.
I was in a this new thing, Blab. Have you seen it yet?
Are the global Twitter marketing specialists using it?
Yes, and it's turned into a it's a great product, really, really great product.
Blab IM is the Twitter handle.
That's the one. Blab IM. It had a bit of a supernova moment yesterday, I think, because Jason Fried from 37 Signals did a live thing,
and love him.
Yes, love them. They did a thing yesterday, and then all of a sudden it was just on all the Webby Geeks radar maps that everyone seemed to be talking about it yesterday. And when I was
talking about hashtags, what are they?
So it's like Meerkat and Periscope, but it's if you were having a conversation like we are right now, you would be able to have a live video broadcast, and you'd be able to take questions from other people who would be able to chime in with a live video broadcast themselves as well. It sounds like it would be horrendous, but it's actually quite good.
Say that again. I'm lost already.
So it's two video chats, essentially, a bit like a Google Hangouts. But at any point, on the right hand side, you've got a chat room, which is much like what we've got going on at 5x5 right now. And then you can take questions there. And then as people would like to chime in, they can add themselves to the video conferencey type call. So it sounds really like professional business person, but actually it's quite good fun. So I was noodling around on it last night, and there was like a live talent show where people were just joining and singing, which was quite funny.
Is it Periscope for Twitter?
It's like, I think it's using either Meerkat or Periscope on the back end, and it's connecting people together. It's very interesting. I think they've done it beautifully, simply. I think it will have its heyday, but at the moment it's being used by direct marketers, and it just is it's a nightmare. You go onto it and it's like 20 ways to build your following on LinkedIn.
How do you start a business? Real talk about making your dream come true. How do you start a business? Real talk about making your dream come true with a different hashtag.
Yes, it's exactly that right now. And if the direct marketers get off of it or stop it being so direct marketing, then it'll be great. But right now I went on it and I was like, oh, this is everything I hate about the internet right now, all in one spot. But I think it will diversify.
But you're into social media. I mean,
you actually
one of the few designers I know that like really study, well, you're one of the few app and web designers I know that really studies it and draws conclusions about it and all that.
Yeah, I think they're all such individual beasts that need to be tamed in one way or another, that I find it interesting that people generalize quite a lot with social media.
It all together?
Yeah, it just gets all lumped together. And it's like, you think of Twitter, you think of Facebook, you think of all the big players. But I've been
or automatically retweet the same exact thing on Facebook and Twitter, which is strange to me.
Yeah, very odd, very odd. I think the thing that I've learned most just by looking at even just Blab yesterday is that people just, the general public outside of our industry, and even people in our industry, they're just a bit lost with it. Everyone's paddling really fast and getting nowhere and wondering why. And we're putting so much weight on follower counts and everything like that, that we're sort of losing sight of the real thing, which is just produce good content and chime in on community stuff that helps. You know, don't try and build up something superficial. Do something for the good of doing it, not because you want to make your follower count go up. But that's not what people want to hear.
Well, it's weird. Like, you can get obsessed with stats that are mostly meaningless.
Yes.
Like, I've got three actual friends, but I've got 5,000 friends on Facebook. Right?
Yeah.
You could have like a million followers on Twitter and die alone.
Yeah.
You know, and not be discovered for 5 days.
Yeah. Like, yeah. That's
eating you.
That's upbeat. Yeah, sure. I mean, that I feel like could be a book title at some point. It's all a bit, I don't know. I feel like we're going to have this moment in the next year to a year and a half where we all just realize that very thing. We're surrounded by people, but surrounded by no one. I do think it's a little bit dangerous sometimes, that whole looking at your follower count. I mean, I used to work somewhere where we were dealing with follower counts in the millions, not in the thousands.
And like a celebrity social media.
Yeah, yeah, it
was platform.
That was it, exactly. We were dealing with celebrities, big celebrities with millions and millions of Twitter followers.
Like Rihanna.
Yeah, like
did
big
I say it right? I said it like
Rihanna.
I just said it like Kroll. Yeah, Rihanna. Yeah, I like love the Rihanna. The kids, Rihanna.
It's like when people say, "I love garage music."
Garage music.
Wow. Yeah. So, do you not have that type of music over here?
Like, we have library music.
Oh, it's called garage music in the UK.
Garage. But, you mean like garage bands? You mean like proto punk?
Yeah. Something like that, but it's just funny because people who don't know how to pronounce it in the UK end up saying garage music, making it sound very posh. Anyway, the whole social media thing is just an interesting bubble that I think is waiting to burst right now. So I have worked in it for a long time and it is fascinating, but the whole thing with millions of Twitter followers is it's very superficial. Sometimes they're even purchased just to make them look like they have credible followings when actually
that
they don't.
I don't get. There's like apps for Instagram where, and I was reading like apps where you follow anyone back who follows you, but then you unfollow them if they're not really following you or if they're, and I don't know why. I don't know what the payoff is. Obviously there's some kind of, you know, but it's pure luck. I mean, if you're Rihanna, then you know you're going to have millions of followers. But like, if you're just some schmo, like if you're just some web design schmo, like I was on the Twitter who to follow page like 8 years ago, just happened to be, and as a result, I have a higher follower count than some other people. And then there's those other damn people who have a higher follower count than me, and I hate them.
You do?
I have some, like, there's someone who worked for me, and I consider myself one of their mentors, and they have like 1,000 more followers than I do. And I'm like, why? That's not right. Isn't it supposed to go down? You know?
Yeah, I can see that.
It's like my dad doesn't really want me making more money than he did. He does. He thinks he does. He probably doesn't. Like, do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. But I think that you're being very humble because you have actually contributed a heck of a lot to this industry.
But I've heard you talk about this where, let's say that you had 300,000 followers.
Yeah.
And then you said, I'm selling a book. That might mean that you'd actually sell 100 books from those 300,000 followers. If you're lucky, if you're really engaged and people like you and, you know, and you're not filling your feed with junk, then you might sell 100 copies.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, it's not a science by any stretch, but when we were doing some stuff,
studies about this, right?
Yeah. We did studies and it was 0.04% was the, it was very, very small. If you were asking for something where
the direct mail.
I guess it's because what people forget is that your follower count at any one point, if you take a quarter of it, that is normally who is able to see your tweets at that point.
On average, if they're not, and if you're following thousands of people like I am, then
then it's probably a lot less.
I see a tenth of. I have to have special groups set up for people like you or Jeremy Keith or Karen McGrain or Ethan Marcotte, whatever, just so that I don't miss stuff that you say and do. Because otherwise it's just going to go streaming past with, you know.
Why did you just lower how... Why don't you just lower how many people you follow?
Okay, so for instance, I'm at an event apart.
Yeah.
And there's an attendee who's tweeting a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And they're really capturing a lot of things that are being said. They're doing a really good job of it. Uh-huh. So I go and look at their page on Twitter and it's like, oh, they're interesting. So I follow them.
Okay.
And 6 months later, I might not remember, you know, they're just someone I follow now because I think they're interesting. And stuff keeps being interesting. Like there's some magazine or some weird little photography publication or something. And I don't want to miss. So I'm like a kid in a candy store, or I'm like a person with an eating disorder at a buffet, all you can eat buffet. And I just keep going, you know, my plate's full, but the shrimp looks good. And then I can't eat any of the stuff that I've put on my plate because I'm full.
Yeah.
So if you want to know expertise, that's how to use Twitter, kids.
I can understand that.
I'm a social media expert. I pile this crap on my plate and then I don't eat it. Global Twitter marketing specialist.
There's
I'm thinking of a person who actually calls themselves that. They've got like a typographic treatment. It's like, I don't know. What is that?
He
spent a lot of money on that.
I listened to his stuff last night and I found it was hard to not come across like a troll. I've got to admit, it was the one time I really wanted to just jump in and say, I'm really sorry, but I don't actually think that you know what you're talking about whatsoever. But the worst thing was he had complete narcissistic traits of he actually thought he was the best social media expert in the world. And to listen to someone like that who was, I wrote down his mantra actually. He's written a book which is
a free ebook called
it was like Three Steps to Solve Twitter or something like that.
Yeah, we can't say the real name because that would be mean.
I just
and then
no.
Just be snotty little people.
Exactly.
We're better, and we're
No, we're not. It's just interesting the way that I think people have come to believe the way that these social networks work. And I think he genuinely believes that this is the way that you become an international superstar on Twitter. And
Probably he knows ways to get 1.2 million followers. Now, whether those are actually active, engaged followers, whether half of them are bots. You know, yeah. I'm sure he can sell this service to someone. It's like as if you were to go to some company and go, you need more Facebook likes.
Yes.
Yeah, we don't have enough Facebook likes. Now you get them more Facebook. They're meaningless. They don't get one customer out of it, but they're happy.
Yeah,
for a couple of days.
The Facebook likes thing is a very interesting problem, actually, because what most people do, and most people are dealing, if you're working in a big business, then it's a little bit different because they do tend to just plow a ton of money into marketing so that they get their likes up to a level where they deem it as satisfactory for them on their level. But with smaller businesses, it's much harder, and you see people begging friends and family for likes or share this page and you know, you might win this, that or the other. The sad thing about those competitions is I personally get quite angry by those sort of things, but they do work. But then your friends and family will mute your the page that they've liked. They won't unlike it because they don't want to be mean. It's a bit like you with your Twitter followers, but they will mute you. Therefore, everything going forward, all of your analytics are completely skewed on Facebook because you have no idea who's dormant, who's actually looking at stuff. It's it can be quite a problem.
No one's ever told me this, but I have a theory.
Mm-hmm.
When I go to Facebook and in the left column, on the desktop. It says friends. I have the feeling that the nine or so people it highlights are the only people who are actually paying attention to my Twitter feed. They're the ones who are most likely engaged. I mean, I look and go, well, this person comments, this person comments. I see them.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty much it.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, their algorithm seems to change quite a lot depending on. I mean, I came off Facebook 3 weeks ago. Personally, it was driving me absolutely insane and sucking.
You killed your account?
I killed it. Yeah. I deactivated it. I didn't kill it
because you wanted to.
Yeah. You can deactivate it at any point. That just means that it's in like a frozen state on Facebook. You can log back in with your password at any point and it all just pings back to life again. But while you're not there, your avatar goes dark and no one can interact with you, which is kind of what I wanted.
is there a way? Okay, I have a couple of questions.
Yeah.
So when like how, all right. This morning I looked at it on my phone and it said that I lived in New York and was, I don't know, an art director at Gray Advertising or something. It took something from the deep past, from like 25 years ago. You know, you fill out a timeline. Like, why wouldn't it take what I'm doing now? And I know, I'm sure I'm an edge case because I'm doing five things. Right, I have the big web show and a book apart and a list apart, event apart, happy cog. I'm sure they go, well, fuck this guy's, sorry, language. Language, sorry. Not you. I mean, the listeners. I know there's some sensitive ears out there. I'm really sorry. But they look at it and go, we don't know what to do with this guy. He's been working at all these places and he's still working at them and he hasn't quit. This doesn't fit. What we programmed this for.
It doesn't fit the
We programmed this for, I worked at Facebook and then I worked at Twitter and now I work at Google. That's the paradigm. They don't know what to do with anything else. So, but it's sort of embarrassing to look at some, you know, not the highlight of my career and see that that's being broadcast as what I do.
Is it being broadcast or is it being brought back to you as a, they've started sort of taking on time hop. So they've got this thing where it re-throws your history back up at you. And only if you share it to your followers, do they see it. Otherwise, to your friends, sorry. Otherwise, no one else sees it. So they've started doing that as well.
Okay. How do you find out these things?
I just read a lot about the different, like when social media stuff changes, or I'm actually that sad person that reads the update notes on iOS as well.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I think it's important that if you're doing it, like I do social media on behalf of other people in the UK and stuff. And it's important for you to know about those things, because if they have a question, you go, oh, I'm not really sure. They think,
and you can't, and you're responsible for your client. It's true. You can't really, if somebody's terms suddenly change that they own the copyright on everything you publish, you need to tell your client that.
Yeah, precisely, because some of the clients are, actors and actresses in the UK, and it's important, you know, you're talking about stuff where their contract could be terminated if they put a foot wrong, especially if you work for the BBC in England. Oh, they're so uptight. If an actor is then seen promoting any product while they're part of the BBC, they get hauled in and... a very, very stern talking to. So it is very important if you...
A stern talking to.
Yeah, that's a nice word. It's a nice word.
And they get a stern talking to, I'm afraid.
It's a nice way of saying an ass whooping.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, so it's important if you're dealing with pockets like that and very volatile type personalities as well, who would likely to turn on you and say, oh, it's your fault that my... image has ended up as a billboard in Times Square or something. It's important that you know about these changes. But for the most part, people freak out about terms of condition changes with Facebook and Instagram, and it lasts a week. I'm going to boycott. I'm not going to use it. And nothing changes.
Yeah, nothing changes. Because there's 20 prominent, well, they would have been bloggers, but now there's 20 prominent Twitter users. Every time a mentally ill person with easy access to a gun in the United States kill somebody, there are like 30 different agendas instantly. Like, and it becomes very political. And then there's the people who say we can't make it political and let's just pray for the families. And, you know, and it's, I mean, I personally can't stand the NRA. And I think we're in, you know, it would take, I think we, they, I think people could, everybody in the country could get killed and the NRA would still be like, that's our right. But it's a weird country. I mean, we're real into rights.
Yeah, but where guns are concerned, I mean, you guys, well, that's a whole rabbit hole, but it's phenomenal to me.
I'm foolish to open it, but yeah. No, but, and it never gets almost, except on Twitter, it never gets discussed anywhere but on Twitter. That's the weird thing, too. Like, so, you know, if one kid listens to heavy metal and then takes drugs, heavy metal gets banned for 10 years and they have a whole investigation. I mean, I lived through that. I remember that. Like they had backwards masking and Tipper Gore was leading the charge against heavy metal and later against rap. Like it was destroying the minds of our youth. But a kid gets a gun and goes into the school and kills his friends or kids he doesn't like. Nobody talks about guns. And over again, this happens. I'm seeing that, but I hate seeing that on Twitter. I hate the same conversations. It feels like impotence. Like, now this person's going to say something super harsh about guns and a whole bunch of people who agree are going to pile on and then a whole bunch of people who disagree are going to, you know, and it's like, it's so predictable. It's like
I did this thing about 2 or 3 months ago where I had to put everyone in very certain pockets for things. So I had to know that if I was going on Facebook, it was actually friends who were on there and not work colleagues or anything like that. So I removed all of the people who had kind of crept their way from Twitter to Facebook, who actually I would not tell certain parts of my life nor want to share. So I removed those. Did the same in vice versa for Twitter. I removed all of my personal life from Twitter and then carried on going. So then I wanted to curate.
Has it helped you?
Yeah, it has really helped me because in terms of like, I found that I had a lot of like social anxiety around my phone in the morning, especially if I was traveling. I would dread looking at my phone because I couldn't ever put into pockets where the stress might be coming from because it could be coming from all angles. I could have a client who I happened to friend on Facebook years ago sending me a message on what I would deem a private channel to say, oh, hey, you know, can we have an update on such and such piece of work? Or that could be coming from Twitter, or it could be, you know, there was all these avenues that I just felt that I was open at all part, at any time of the day or night. I was just this ball of nerves because I never knew whether that ting on Twitter was someone saying, you know, the notification was someone saying, oh, hey, I really enjoyed your course on Treehouse or something, or it was someone trolling me, or it was some friend asking a question that that in my eyes they should be asking me, you know, maybe by text even, not even on Twitter. You know, it was all just all the lines were far too blurred. So then I just pocketed everything, just put everything in these really neat pockets. And it's really helped in terms of knowing that if I have Twitter notifications on, it's not going to be certain aspects.
It's not going to be personal.
Yeah, and the same with Facebook. If I had Facebook notifications on, it's not going to be about work. So that just really helped just to try and unblur those lines that had happened. But I'm a bit strange like that. I need to know, like, I hate the anxiety of waking up in the morning and just having everything coming at you in all angles. So I needed
for
to,
people
like,
with anxiety disorders, like I have an anxiety disorder. Mm-hmm. We live in a terrible time. It's like, my dad calls a lot, which is great, but he's had a lot of health problems. So every time the phone shows me my dad, which is always like in the middle of a podcast or something, or in the middle of a meeting, so I can't actually answer. And I think, oh my God, something's happened. Something's happened. My dad, oh, I got to find out. And I have family issues that are like in court. And I don't know. I can't go to my mailbox. Used to drive my ex-wife crazy after she moved out. She'd be like, did I get this such and such? And I'd go, I don't know. I'm afraid to go to the mailbox because it's going to be jury duty or a tax problem or, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where the mailbox is really where they go.
Yeah. Yeah, I got really good at ignoring things for a long time. I got really good at just saying, oh, if it's that urgent, it will pop up somewhere.
That doesn't work.
And it doesn't work. No.
I was lucky enough that I got to a point where I had enough business going on that I could hire a bookkeeper. Uh-huh. Daphne, she's amazing. And it's changed my life. Because, I mean, I don't know anything about bookkeeping. And I was running businesses and like writing in the margin of a checkbook, which freelancer paid or whatever. And
yeah.
And smudging it with peanut butter. It was just a nightmare. Now, literally, when I go to the mailbox, I'll just bring a pile and put it on Daphne's desk.
That's a nice way to
do it. There you go. There you go. And if there's something I need to deal with, she'll bring it to me. Oh, it has changed my, I mean, this sounds like, I know a lot of people listening are probably going like, oh, first world problems, like 1% problems or 5% problems or whatever it is, but 12%. I think I'm in the 12%. But here's the thing. I couldn't function. I was having real trouble functioning and staying calm and being present. Like anxiety eats at you and then you can't be present for your family or you can't be present for your friends. You're just...
Oh, it's a terrible thing. It's a really... I had this thing, I think it was last tax year. The year when my mom passed away, I thought, and I held it like a badge, an honor badge, I thought my work was completely unaffected because in my head, it was something she was never part of. So I was able to continue working. I thought I was able to continue working quite well. And it was only when I did my taxes and how this went under my radar, I have no idea. I presume it was because I had savings. I earned 84% less that year. Even though in my brain, I was doing exactly the same amount of hours, the same amount of work. I wasn't. I was just taking eight times as long to complete a project as I used to. So any form of anxiety that is hanging over you has a massive effect on what you're doing on a day-to-day basis. But it's amazing how undetected it can go. Like absolutely amazing.
You also spend a lot of time responding to lawyers or... whatever the situation is. And
yeah,
but if you do it in your office, you think, yeah, I spent 8 hours at work. I should be making a lot of money. Well, you know what? It's time to take a little rest break.
Yeah.
And what better way to do that than with a comfortable mattress? Believe it or not, I am going to now thank one of our sponsors. Can I do that for just a second?
Yeah.
It's Casper, the friendly mattress. Casper is that's Casper the Friendly Ghost. You wouldn't know that. That's from the 1930s when I was a child. But
I do remember Casper the Friendly Ghost. They remade it in the 80s. Come on.
They did. Like with 3D animation.
I can't remember. I know they remade it, but I'm not a film buff like you are.
Okay. Well, Casper was probably super politically correct in that when they remade it. Like that's another thing. But the Casper I'm talking about is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price. The mattress industry has forced customers to pay notoriously high markups, and Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing that savings directly to you, the customer. A Casper mattress provides resilience and long-lasting supportive comfort. Their mattress is one of a kind. It's a hybrid. Right? Like a designer developer type hybrid. Well, this is a hybrid mattress. I'm not, you know, that combines premium latex foam with memory foam. So they've combined two technologies, latex foam and memory foam, and just the right sink for just the right sink at just the right bounce, which is my favorite part, the bounce. They come together for better nights and brighter days. And it's $500 for a twin size mattress, $950 for a king size mattress. It's a shockingly fair price compared to industry averages. And they have a risk-free trial and return policy. They let you sleep on a Casper for 100 days. And if you don't like it, free delivery, free painless return.
Nice.
Yeah, right?
Their branding is amazing as well.
With their branding?
Their branding. And I saw some stuff around New York City about it, where it comes in a box and then they deliver it to you. If you're in one of the main cities, they can sometimes deliver it to you the same day.
Wow.
Mm.
I wish I'd known that. You know, I just got my daughter a new bed because she's growing. She still had her baby bed. Actually, I got the mattress separately from one company and the bed from another company. right? Like,
yeah,
I wish I'd known about this because this is really cool.
But I love sorry, go on.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, I love companies that make one, like they say, we do one thing and we think that it's the best because we only sell one thing and it comes in three sizes and that's it. Like, you don't have to make a decision about it. I think it's great.
It allows them to relentlessly focus on constantly improving their product.
Absolutely. Very smart. Very smart.
So if you've been listening so far, go and get $50 toward any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/bigwebshow and use the code bigwebshow, BIGWEBSHOW, casper.com/bigwebshow. Terms and conditions apply. I don't know what those would be, though, but you'll find out on the website. So thank you to Casper for supporting 5x5 and supporting the Big Web Show with their firm yet soft, warm yet cool support of the Casper mattress. I have another sponsor to thank in just a few moments, but I'm so relaxed after reading about Casper that I think it's time to just talk again.
Sure. Like,
okay. Well, thank you. That is good. Your career has followed an interesting trajectory, right? You were designing apps first, I believe.
Yeah, I still do. Yeah.
You still do?
Yeah.
And for like BBC or for clients?
For clients. And I was lucky that I got bigger clients, not sort of people testing the app waters. I've worked with some really nice size companies, TV companies, all sorts of people.
How did that happen? How do you make that jump? I'm sure a lot of people listening want to know because, you know, maybe you have fantastically satisfied customers, but they're local businesses and you want to make it to the next level.
I did that for years as well. That's how I grew my business as a very small studio in Leigh-on-Sea back in England. And I made the jump. I think it's probably not the answer that people want to hear. It was just right time, right place. It was just as the iPhone came out. And so it was 2007. And I was already designing a Mac app for a client. And he said to me, how about you try designing for this new thing called the iPhone? And I was very honest and said, I'd love to, but I've never designed for anything before on the iPhone. So if I charge you for 2 weeks, but give me four to do it in, do you think that's fair? And he said, yeah, let's roll with it. And then it all spiraled from there because I got a letter of recommendation from Apple, but wasn't allowed to use it. So I could use it under the radar and say,
that's so Apple.
It was really nice. It was at the time when, you know, people at Apple, you could email them about, because the iPhone was such a new platform. They had a specific sort of team for app approval. They still do, but it was much smaller than it is now. And you could email them and they would email you back. Yes. And it was a great time.
I remember that period. It would be like someone you knew.
Yeah. You would almost have a personal relationship with someone on the Apple approval team.
You'd be like, I left cookies and milk for you.
Yeah, it was really nice. It was a nice time. I mean, it's different now because they're just dealing with the volume that they are. But back then it was really nice. So I think I was lucky that I had this great email, but wasn't really, I was never allowed to broadcast it, but I obviously could reference it when I was trying to get new work for other apps, which was great. And then I was teaching about it. I've always loved teaching people about the things that I've learned or the way that I've learned it along the way. So then I started doing workshops all over the place. And it just really spiraled from there.
All day long?
All day workshops. All day workshops.
Do that?
I don't. I haven't done it for a long while, actually.
My hat's off to anyone who does that. I used to do that. I can't do that anymore.
Really?
Yeah, I can't do that anymore.
I find it quite good fun. The last one I did was last year in Vegas, and it was good fun. Yeah, it was nice. But yeah, they are hard. They're very hard work. They're very, very hard work. But I love teaching. So that was how all that sort of transpired, really. So I think it goes back to that old thing of just keep doing what you love and putting it on the web. You know, even if you make mistakes and you're not entirely sure if what you're doing is right. It's like this week I wrote about my experiences with Flexbox. There's a million people, or maybe not that many, but that's the new buzzword in web design. And there's going to be people who know more about Flexbox than I do. And I was scared to put out a blog post about it, but I didn't see
the post. I'm going to look for it later.
Yeah.
But I loved your tweet about it, like how you became a convert.
Yeah, complete convert to Flexbox. It is amazing. But
the trick is what to do about Safari on the phone in iOS 8 and earlier, because it's like, I don't know. I remember when Safari was like such an amazing browser.
Yeah.
What are they? I guess they're tying it. They become Microsoft. What Microsoft was in the 90s or in the 2000s. Apple sort of like, we do have a new version of the browser. It will come out with our new operating system, which we can't tell you about. Well, will it support Flexbox? We can't talk about that. Well, can you tell me the size of the phone? No. Actually, they're like Microsoft if Microsoft had been secretive.
Yeah. Yeah, completely.
Like bizarre. And I love them, of course.
Yeah.
It's like an abusive relationship where, you know, no matter what they do, I love them. So it made my phone stop working, and they told me that it's not, that's out of warranty. I love them. I'm buying a new one.
Their products are interesting. I bought a gold MacBook this week whilst traveling with a 15-inch MacBook Pro and an 11-inch MacBook Air.
Like, wow.
I found myself going, what the F am I doing?
Did you need all three? Were you testing? What was testing for, like?
No, I honestly just got drawn in by the new shiny with a view that I would sell my MacBook Air when I got home and my MacBook Pro.
There's no room on the air.
Sorry?
There's no room on the air.
Yeah.
I would love,
I'll go
love
with
it.
That.
The Air is like an iPad mini. I love the form of it. I love like something you could like throw in your gym bag.
Well, the new MacBooks are like that. They're phenomenal.
But how much room is on them?
Well, they are small. It's 256, I think. I got the really, really
256,
small.
Like, it's like you've got a floppy disk.
Yeah, but
like you've got this incredible computer, and then there's this like but it's fast.
But the interesting thing is I've got the top spec MacBook Pro for work. So the one that's got 16 gig of RAM and a terabyte hard drive and all sorts of stuff. And the new MacBook runs like not as far, like if I'm doing sketch work or anything like that, but I didn't buy it for that purpose. But it runs better than the MacBook Pro. So it runs cooler. It runs quicker. It's for certain tasks.
Because it's solid state.
Yeah, and the other one is solid state as well. It's very strange. Huh. Very, very strange. But I got the first generation.
It's the gold, I guess.
I think, yeah, it must be the gold. It must be. But I've got it to write with. That was my thing is I allowed myself to buy that if I finished my book. So that was...
The next MacBook's going to be with blood diamonds, I believe.
Oh, good.
If the gold one succeeds, they're going to make one out of blood diamonds.
Nice. Yeah.
You're writing a book?
Yeah.
What book is that?
I've kept it really quiet. I haven't actually really
you
said
have.
It. Yeah, I'm writing a book about my experiences of taking and all the skills that we have in the web industry into an offline business, into a physical offline business.
You're writing a business book.
Yeah, it's kind of a business book. It's actually turned into a bit more of like a...
Design business book.
No, it's more turned into like social media type stuff. What to do if you're a small business. I don't think anyone is really focusing on the small business when there's thousands and thousands of them. And there are business books that people buy on Amazon are the ones that do really well, mainly targeted at small businesses. And no one's really talking about how to do social media if you are a small business. So I found myself writing about my experiences, but actually writing more about the digital side of actually this is a small local business. It's not a nationwide chain or anything like that. And this is how I built it up to a following of enough credibility that it it caused a significant rise in revenue. So
that's going to be a fantastic book. I've heard your, as you know, I've heard your presentation on this topic several times at an event apart. And every time I took away something new and tried it with my small businesses and saw immediate results.
Oh, like, that's fantastic.
Because I mean, I know what to do with my personal social media. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the business ones, you're like, well, we're just broadcasting news because we're, you know, or whatever. And it was like, oh, no, the stuff you talk about, like thinking as if everything's a conversation by the fire with your very best friends. And
yes,
it's wonderful stuff. What's the name of the book?
It hasn't got a title as yet. It's just called That File That Sits on My Computer and Sometimes Gets Tapped Into at the moment.
A great title.
Yeah. So
that's going to tear up stores.
It's going to be on the New York bestseller
list. File that sits on my computer. I think you might want to shorten it to that. That file that sits on my computer.
I
think I can see Oprah talking about it.
Yeah. That file that sat on my computer. Yeah, it's just one of these, but I think writing a book is so hard. I had never realized. I always thought, I'll be able to just sit down and I'll bash it out in a week. I don't know what takes these people so long. Unless you're Luke Roblowski, he actually does do that.
He does. That's because he's been basically writing it on his blog the whole time.
Yeah, he is a writer.
He's a writer. Also, he's a Hemingway-esque writer. There's no fat in his writing.
No, he is he's
fact, combine the two facts into a point, new paragraph, fact, combine those into a point, new paragraph, take the two points that were made in the previous two paragraphs and blow your mind. Next paragraph, subhead is like, I don't know. He writes like an information designer.
He writes, which
he is. And he writes like Hemingway. If Hemingway, instead of killing lions in Africa, had been really interested in whether left-aligned or right-aligned text was better in a form field, which I can see Hemingway caring.
I love him for it, but it's also why I'm always infinitely glad that I never follow him at an event apart and I follow you instead.
You're
daunting enough. No, you're daunting enough. But Luke.
I wouldn't want to follow Luke. I follow Zeldman, thank God.
No, I'm always happy to follow you because it seems like it's a, I don't know, I feel that little, I don't know, I like following you afterwards. But Luke is the person who gets everyone fired up after lunch. And that's a very, very hard thing to do. Like,
that's impossible. Yeah.
That's impossible.
I've done the lunch spot on other people's conferences. It is tough.
Yeah, I know people who fall asleep after lunch at conferences.
Especially because there's so much starch.
Okay.
If you don't like the chicken,
mm-hmm.
then you're going to have the pasta. Or if you're vegetarian, it's like I don't eat meat, so it's like I put a lot of salad on my plate and then I eat the pasta. So yeah, you get sleepy. You know what? But if you get sleepy, there's Casper has a solution for that. You know what another big problem is? How to host your website. But I'm going to tell you what to do about that. Are you ready, Sarah?
I am. I'm gripping my chair in anticipation.
Okay, grip that chair. DreamHost.
Oh.
DreamHost. Since 1997, DreamHost has helped entrepreneurs and developers the world over bring their dreams to life on the internet. They offer domain registrations, web hosting, and even powerful cloud storage and computing services. There are 1.5 million plus websites, WordPress blogs, and applications on DreamHost. That's more than 400,000 customers spanning 100,000 countries. Did I say 100,000 countries?
I don't think
there are 100,000 countries. I was just getting excited. I'm sorry. More than 400,000 customers spanning 100 plus countries trust DreamHost to be their online home. It's packed with unbelievable value. DreamHost is the best place to launch a blog, website, or a web app into the stratosphere. They're home to 750,000 WordPress installs and have a helpful staff of professional WordPress experts. DreamHost is the proud winner of PC Magazine's Business Choice Award for Best Web Hosting Service and has been a recommended hosting solution by WordPress.org since 2005. That's 10 years ago, soon to be 11 years ago, right? Because we're edging toward 2016. DreamHost offers the hosting solution for individual websites or high-volume enterprise sites and makes it simple to upgrade if your needs change at any time. And their award-winning in-house support staff is available all day, every day, via live chat and email, 24/7, 365. That means on Christmas Eve. You understand what I'm saying? On New Year's Eve at midnight, you could call them just to mess with them, and it would work, right? It would work. DreamHost is giving the listeners of this show a special offer. When you can't refuse, visit dreamhost.com to sign up and make sure to use the code TheBigWebShow395. TheBigWebShow395, all caps, all one word. TheBigWebShow395. Visit dreamhost.com to sign up with TheBigWebShow395 at checkout, and you'll get top-rated web hosting for, this is unbelievable, $3.95 a month. And they throw in a free domain name. Like you, that's unbelievable.
Buy a domain name for Wow.
Exactly. It's cheaper than buying a domain name. Instead of buying a domain name and then looking for a host and spending a lot of money to go there with the Big Web Show 395 at dreamhost.com. And I think I'm going to start a couple of new websites just because it's, you know, how can I afford not to at these prices?
Yeah.
So thank you, DreamHost, for supporting 5x5 and the Big Web Show. Thank both of our sponsors today, Casper.com and DreamHost.com. And now let's continue our remarkable conversation. You are you still doing the blowouts?
Yes. Although I've never done them. But yes, so it's going through an interesting transition period actually at the moment. Okay, so you,
for people who have never listened to the show before or aren't familiar, you after designing a bunch of websites and designing a bunch of apps, you decided to try taking design, all your design skills, and bringing them into a real world business. And the business you settled on was Blowout Bar, Blush Bar. Blush Bar is the name. Blowout's the game.
Yep.
This is where women pay someone not to cut their hair and not to wash their hair.
Yep. It's just, well, actually we do.
We do wash,
cuts, colors, everything now. We do the whole works. Yeah.
Because, so it's really a salon.
Yeah, it's really a full-blown salon now. So it started off as that, it started off that way, but we found very quickly that because we were seeing women much more frequently than they were seeing their hairdressers, because they were coming in sometimes 3 or 4 times a week to have their hair done. And we built up a rapport with them that they were quite happy to ditch their original hairdressers because they built up a rapport with us. So then they started asking us for additional services, which we said no for about 6 months. And then it just seemed silly. We were just letting money roll out the door. So we changed it up slightly. We still don't shout that we do the extra services, but we do them. It's sort of like a hidden menu type thing. But
Any men customers? Do you do anything with beards?
No, not really. We do the
beards are hard. You understand that?
It was just the way that I designed it was really unashamedly female. So we just guys don't tend to not feel comfortable in there, but it just screams this is a place for women. So there's a really good barber's just round the corner to us that we push business their way instead. So yeah,
I go to spas here. I mean, there's nail salons on every block in New York, as you know.
Yeah, of course.
But I sometimes feel like I'm in a foreign country and I should I'm spying and I should just keep a low profile. I mean, it's normal. A lot of men get manicures, right? It's a normal thing.
Yeah.
Mm. Right? I used to walk around with monkey nails and now I don't. Right. But sometimes you do feel like you're in the girls' locker room by mistake and you should just keep your mouth shut and get out of there alive.
I can understand that. But Blush Bar. We used to have, there was
Blush Bar. Yeah, that's not going to, you need something manly. You need a, like, make a new, I'm giving you your new business idea.
A new man version of Blush Bar.
A new man version of Blush Bar, like Macho Hugo or something. I don't know.
Yeah, something
muscles,
like that.
Muscles McKill. Pound beefsteak fist off or something. I don't know. What's okay. manly?
Yeah.
Testosterone Joe's.
If I had my time again, I wouldn't pick something in the hairdressing industry. Let's just put it that way.
That's like half the world must, half the stuff in our oceans is human hair at this point, I think.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I do. I wouldn't pick that industry. So it has a very...
Animals. Do you like blowouts for animals?
You laugh about that, but someone actually took the concept of Blush Bar and took it up to Kensington, opened a store next to Harrods, completely ripped off our branding and the interior of the shop and had it as a dog blowout bar. That happened. Yep.
Imitation, every
serious form of
design flattery. Every successful design you do, someone's going to rip off. And every design idea you have, someone's going to rip off. That's a given.
It's funny. It's funny to me, really. But it's been an interesting road. Sport. Sorry?
Capitalism is a blood sport.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a good journey to find out, I've learned so much in business over the last 2 years that I thought I knew a lot about business from having my own web studio, and I just, that is nothing compared to actually having employees and all of that nonsense that comes with it. So,
and if you open in America, you'd have to deal with insurance too.
Yeah, I mean, the UK is just, we don't have that problem. But we do have a new problem where the government has just made it mandatory that we have to pay into employee pension schemes, which for small businesses is really going to choke everyone. So that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
You sound like a Tory.
It is a very Tory thing to do.
Just to complain about it. I mean, I'm a business owner and I vote Democrat, but I often sound Republican. It's like, but I'm a job creator. I'm creating wealth. How dare they? Because it's like, it's kind of true.
Yeah.
It's
I have mixed feelings about stuff like that. I think it's just the industry that I chose is steeped in so much tradition, and I think naively I thought I was going to be able to change something that is quite broken.
You thought you were going to disrupt taxis like Uber?
Yeah, not necessarily like that, but I thought there would be an element of being able to instill a certain work sort of ethic into people who actually are taught bad work ethics. It's very strange. In the UK, it's not like here with cosmetology licenses and things like that, where it actually costs quite a bit of money to go into something like the hairdressing industry. They have to put in quite a few thousand dollars to get their cosmetology licenses. In the UK, it's the complete opposite. So it ends up with an interesting group of you know, they're normally very, very young when they come out of training, and it ends up with you having to tell them about how the real world works, and that, you know, if you want to keep your job, you have to turn up for your job consistently. Wow. And those types of things were things that I had taken for granted by being surrounded by the web industry.
Because I've always worked.
And I've been surrounded and been very lucky in my web career that I've been surrounded by people who are like myself, who are very self-motivated, able to do things off their own back, not have to be told in a very prescriptive fashion, this is how you do X, Y, and Z. You just get on with it. And that's the way it goes.
In fact, this is why we all start companies.
Yeah.
The second time someone tells you how to do something, you're like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
Working for myself now. Thank you.
Exactly that.
I quit a job because my boss said that a border should be, that my 2 pixel border should be 1 pixel thick. And I laughed. And I mean, he might even have been right. It doesn't matter. I was the creative director. He was the company president. I was like, he said, that looks like it's 2 pixels thick. I said, yep. He said, should be 1 pixel. And I laughed. He said, what are you laughing at? I said, you're kidding, right? He said, no. I was just like, well, we're a year late to market with our product. Shouldn't you be worrying about that? I didn't say. I said in my head, we're a year late to market with our product. You should worry about that and let me worry about the pixels. But instead, I just said I quit in my head. But then I said it more nicely when I quit. I said, it's been a great education here and I really learned so much, but I think it's time to pursue new opportunities or some lying crap. I was actually just leaving with nothing. I just quit.
I had an instance a couple of weeks back where I was doing some work for someone and it's made me realize, and I do want to, you know, get this out of my brain and into a blog post at some point. It's made me realize how the web industry, we've sucked the enjoyment out of it. I really feel like we have bit by bit sucked the enjoyment out of creating websites we've made it so complicated to simply sit down. Whereas before I used to remember it being a joy, being looking forward to getting that Photoshop comp signed off. Photoshop, ha ha ha. Comp, feels like no one used that comp. But getting that Photoshop comp signed off and then knowing the next 3 or 4 days you were just going to get to code. That I remember that being an exciting thing. And I was doing something recently and time was of the complete. We had like 3 days to code something. And I said to them, I'm going to do this the way that I've always done it. I'm not going to rely on libraries or plugins or any of these frameworks or anything like that. This is a simple enough design that we should be able to go straight HTML and CSS without needing anything else. This is so simple. And when I actually handed it over to the developer, who was quite a trolley type person by nature, he turned around to me and said, I don't know whoever has told you that you can code, but you can't. Bearing in mind, the website went live without any changes done to it. And that had me thinking, this developer said that to me because there wasn't the framework that he's got used to using. It was using Flexbox, which I don't think that he actually could read. And that was his answer, because it wasn't, it was as we used to do it years ago. And it was fully functional and beautiful and exactly how everything I think still should be. He turned around to me and said, I don't know who told you that you can code, but you can't.
Was it, do you think there was some sexism too?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Because he had, he'd totally trolled me with,
You're a girl. Why are you handing me code?
It was an interesting one. He was, we were using Git and GitHub, and there was a link that I hadn't got for the file. It was linking to a store or something, and I just put, you know, shop.php or whatever it was as a placeholder in there, and he put a commit message, and he committed every single change to the link as a fresh, you know, with a fresh comment. And it said, for F's sake, Sarah, in the message, like it was the worst thing in the world that I could have done was to actually not known the link in the first place and uploaded code. And that was when I had to send a message to the two bosses and say, this isn't cool. I'm out. This guy is a problem and he's going to continue to be a problem for you. If he stays there. So, yeah, it's just interesting, not because it's the typical girl being trolled story, but it's interesting that we've taken web design in such a direction now that unless you bolt on all this stuff that you don't necessarily need, but it's a just-in-case insurance piece of code for down the line to perhaps save you time, it's become a weird thing to just hand over a very clean HTML and CSS file. That is strange to me.
I know.
Very strange to me that I just feel like we've sucked every ounce of enjoyment out of what we used to do. It's become so laborious now.
The other day I wrote on Twitter because I didn't have time to write a post. I didn't really want to go in deep on this. I just wanted to express it, get it off my chest and move on. But it was, rock and roll, hip hop and web design. Just products now.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about all that stuff that once was like the greatest passion in my life. And then I was just like, yeah, okay. Okay. And that'll change. We'll find it again. I mean, I think the new CSS is going to get me back into coding and loving code.
Mm-hmm.
I think I lost heart during a couple periods back before that, when we were just like, there's 5,000 IE workarounds.
I think
when I had to do something for has layout, I started to just go, yeah, this wasn't what I meant by standards.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I meant standards. Like, I meant like you write the leanest, most logical piece of code you can. You go with the most logical piece of markup.
Yes.
Like super lean, and there's an elegance to it. And you even have time to like indent things and make them pretty.
Exactly.
Like, because it's workmanship, and you're just like, you know, you're like polishing it. It's like you've just made this beautiful guitar, and now you're gonna polish it to a sheen before you put it in the case and sell it to somebody. It's just like, that doesn't seem. Also, I've noticed, I mean, this is another weird thing, but processes, we talk about this all the time, but our processes aren't catching up.
No.
Our new reality. Like the other day we had to change, we're changing a cover,
mm-hmm.
A cover photograph on the Event Apart website. And in the old days, that meant you picked the photo and you knew, you know, and it was this size, and then you looked at it and plugged it in and you were done.
Yeah.
But now what it means is, is there always going to be a dark background for the white type in every possible responsive configuration? And if not, and like there's so much complexity to even the smallest thing. And it's wonderful. Like, you know, it's wonderful that we're in this new medium where we're really designing for what the web is.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's also maddeningly complicated and frustrating. And, you know, you can't do that little bit of crafting that we used to do when we had the illusion that we like that everyone was at 1024 by 768. If you go, I've got a widow in this paragraph. I'm going to change the wording to fix this widow. Like, forget that.
Yeah. The thing that's very strange to me is that I feel like I've been doing a lot of thinking about the industry, because it feels like there's been a shift recently, and I haven't really been able to put my finger on why, but I think other people are feeling it too. I spoke to a few people at AEA, and we were all talking about it at the Facebook event. And I think it's interesting that if we were in any other job where we were expected to take on extra responsibility in a certain area, we would be asking for a pay rise, or there would be a dollar value associated with learning or acquiring that skill. We did not do that as an industry, and I think we've shot ourselves in the foot. We have just taken on, when you think about the knowledge and the years of experience, someone who really knows their craft and knows what they're doing has to have to sit down and even think about how to approach doing a professional, you know, website in inverted commas, because I don't think that's the right name for even what they are anymore. But when you think about all those years of experience, if you were to put a dollar value on every single thing that you learned up until that point, you know, you learned a bit of JavaScript, and then you learned how to do responsive, then you learned how to do all of that, would have quite a significant dollar value if it was a regular job where you were then saying, well, I know this skill and I know this skill, or I'm gone, you know, I'm expected to have this much more responsibility for X. We didn't do that as an industry, really. I feel like we're still stuck charging. I know a lot of people are still charging the same as they charged 3, 4, 5 years ago.
10 years ago.
10 years ago, even. Yeah. It feels like we're not.
It used to be a lot.
Yeah.
Let's say you were charging $75 an hour as a web designer.
Yep.
10 years ago, you were just like, wow, I can't believe I'm making this. And now that's a meal at Arby's. So
yeah, it feels very strange to me. It feels like we didn't have those conversations as an industry to say, hang on a moment, responsive layouts and all of this other stuff that's come with actually having to make sure that everything looks great on all devices or wherever you're viewing, that has a significant value to the client. I mean, if you're in a certain, if you're in agencies and stuff like that, they've always known how to charge, and then that's less of an issue. I think the agencies have always known the value of things. But as a freelancer, you're holding the exact same skills, and sometimes the agencies are actually using you as a subcontractor anyway, just quietly. Yeah.
I think the client's budget is the client's budget. And the you know, they had a budget in the old days before web standards. And it was like, all right, for that budget, we can make this many pages that'll work in Netscape 3 and 4 and IE 3 and 4. I mean, I go back a long way. And then once it was with web standards, I'm like, it'll work everywhere and we can do photography. And now we can do content strategy. Well, I think because of that, because developers are getting squeezed, they end up using frameworks, the kind of thing you were alluding to, so that, you know, I don't have time to develop this from scratch. So I'll use all these components and I'll reuse these components. And in some ways, that's nice. There's an ecosystem. If I'm making my own frameworks and I'm reusing modules, you know, if every website is going to need, you know, a photo with a box of text to the side of it and a headline above that, I might as well just design that module and have it ready for whoever, you know, obviously I'll change the fonts and colors and stuff, but I mean, that part makes sense, but I feel like we're about to start another fresh hour of talk. That's really interesting and I'd love to do it, but I think we're running out of time. So we'll have to have you back soon. Meantime, sazzy.co.uk is where people can catch up with all things Sarah Parmenter, including your blog, where you recently wrote Learning Flexbox. It's sazzy.co.uk/learning-flexbox. But don't worry about that because we're going to put this in the show notes. And obviously Sazzy on Twitter is where they look for you. The name of your book, still unknown. Publisher to be determined. I don't know. You may... You're keeping that under wraps.
I'm going to self-publish it.
Going to self-publish.
Yeah,
you've got a good editor?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Okay. Yeah. You need a really good editor. Every writer needs a really good editor.
Indeed.
Okay. Okay. Any place else people should look for you? Well, they can find you on Instagram, right?
Yeah, under the same handle. Yeah, right. Anywhere, really.
You're at Dribbble as Sazzy. You're at Instagram as Sazzy.
Yeah.
You're at Pinterest as Sazzy, and you're at Twitter as Sazzy, and you're sazzy.co.uk. That's what I call branding. That's what I like. I hate it when people have like 12 cool nicknames, one for each social, and I'm like, eh. And then they're like, Crunchbox wants to be your running mate on some running app, and I'm like, do I actually know you? Yeah, it's SleazeX. Or you people make from Instagram as Fontface. I'm like, oh God, help me. I don't know. Anyway, thank you, Sarah Parmenter, so much. Thank you, Casper and DreamHost. Thank you, 5x5, for hosting this exciting live sparring match. And we'll be back next week with another Big Web Show. Thanks, everybody.